Good Sunday morning. This is Hashtag Everyone talking about Hashtag Everything. I'm Kate Doherty, and this is Keely Reger, and we are so excited this morning to have Michael Remus with us this morning from Cottonwood, Arizona.
We are excited. This is going to be fun because he is talking about a subject matter that I think both you and I have close, near, and dear to our hearts, and lots to say.
Yeah, I was trying to think back to when I first met Michael, because the first time I heard him speak, I actually had tears streaming down my face. I don't know if you knew this, Michael. I was sitting in the front row staring intently at you, but I don't remember if it was in 2011 or 2012. It was either in San Antonio, Texas. Were you there at the NDSC that year?
Yes, I was.
Okay, that was the first year then, the very first year that we started Downcountry. I went into his presentation. And for those of you listening today, Michael is the master of all things inclusion. And he's incredibly, in my opinion, gifted because he wears multiple hats. He's been a parent, he's an educator, he's an administrator, he's been a special education director, but what he's done, both from a parent perspective and from an educational standpoint, is move multiple different school districts towards this concept of inclusion that, as I said before, when I sat and listened to him the very first time, I just had tears streaming down my face because I knew that was what we wanted for within our family. Mm-hmm. And it's what Keely's spent the last 20 plus years of her life believing in and working towards. So anyway, Michael, why don't you tell them a little bit about how you first got into this whole business?
Okay, well, I started teaching in special ed clear back in the 70s. I'm old.
Vintage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I started, believe it or not, a segregated school.
Really?
In western Kansas, because it was right when the mandate was passed, and so they didn't have special ed classrooms before then. So I literally had to go out and knock on doors to find students.
Really?
To literally teach in the first school that we had. And my thought then was truly being inclusive, because we were clear out what I call the boonies. Clear out in the middle of nowhere. And I remember being the teacher, the principal, the bus driver, the cook, you know, because again, we just started this. And again, my goal, even clear then, was to be inclusive. And so taught there for a few years, then went back to school and did all my research regarding inclusive practice, which there wasn't a lot then, because special ed was just starting. You know, of doing that. And it was interesting because then I had my family and four children, and we had two sons, believe it or not, with disabilities. And they pretty much continued my passion or drive for inclusive practices. My oldest son had multiple disabilities. Our second son had a mild intellectual disability. Our daughter, that I call a social butterfly. And then our fourth child was on the other end of the spectrum, very gifted. So we attended lots of IEP meetings, you know, and it was always interesting being in the field. And also that first hat that I would wear was being a parent. Mm-hmm. And so it was quite unique and challenging through the years as the kids were growing up, being in the field and really advocating for inclusive practices.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I remember listening to you speak one time, and you said that all your children's diplomas were actually hanging, they needed to hang in your office on your wall because you were the one who earned them for all the hours and all the different IEP meetings that you attended for the four. Love that.
That is correct.
Yeah. So then you've been in, let me see, districts in Tennessee, in Arizona, and basically you've moved them all towards inclusive practices. I know I'm forgetting some of the states you've been in because you've been all over. Kansas.
Yes.
Tennessee.
My goal was to go into districts. When we moved a lot because my goal was once we got one district, that we got inclusive practices pretty much institutionalized so that, you know, it wouldn't go away when the leader left, then it would be going to another state, you know, truly trying to do a district in that state, making them very inclusive. So at least the states that I was in, they would have a model.
Mm-hmm.
Because most of the times I find when I hear about districts being inclusive, I'll go in and visit and consult with them. And what I find is they're inclusive with a certain number of students. In other words, they take students with very mild disabilities and say they're inclusive, and then they kind of hide, you know, or segregate students with more moderate and severe profound needs.
Yes.
And they're not as inclusive as they say they're going to be.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, Michael, one of the things that I love that you talk about is the data. And I have to tell you, before I met you, well, and actually still to this day, I really hate data. I mean, I hate data. But one of the things you always emphasize is data, data. You always need to be able to show your position and back up your position. And darn it, I hate it that you're right on this, but you are right. And the data truly shows and backs up that when you take students with multiple disabilities and you place them in the general education setting with the proper accommodations or modifications depending on their level of need, all students do better, not just the kids who quote unquote learn differently, but the, for lack of a better word, your neurotypical peers do better as well. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. And in other words, because we include students with disabilities into that general classroom, we take all those strategies, those supports, those resources, and again, there's a lot of students in gen ed classes that will never qualify for special ed, but there's a lot of students that are at risk.
Mm-hmm. They still
need
some of those.
And again, many of them just kind of go into a black hole and we don't see improvement in their student achievement. Mm-hmm. When we send those supports into a general that are identified, you know, all students benefit, particularly those students at risk, but we found that when we either co-teach or that we have just even kids, because there are sometimes we pull students out, both students with disabilities and typical peers, into what we call a learning center.
Mm-hmm.
You know, most places may call it a special ed class, but it's a learning center for all students.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they were in a general class or whether they're pulled out for a small group, for just a small period of the day, we're finding the strategies, and particularly with the co-teaching, you've got the beauty of a marriage of having that gen ed teacher knowing, you know, gen ed curriculum and content, and then you've got that special ed teacher that knows accommodations and even modifications, and you marriage those two, and it benefits all kids. And what we found through the years is that's why I'm such a data person, because I really want to be able not to sell it, mm-hmm. but to show that it absolutely works. That in the years, I mean, in the beginning, you got to give it a couple years as you collect your data, because it's changed for everyone. But about that third, fourth year on up, you see the data where kids are progressing like crazy. For example, the last district I was in, the last 2 years, students with disabilities and the students at risk, when they were co-taught and when they were in the general classroom, their scores doubled on state assessment. And again, particularly with students with mild disabilities, they outperformed their typical peers on the state assessment. Didn't mean they caught up, but they closed that gap tremendously. So you know that it works, you know, for all students.
And Michael, I can't believe it. We're already coming to the close of our first segment. And when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about co-teaching and some of this other data collection. But for right now, we want to thank everybody for listening. This is close of the first segment. We've got Michael Remus with us from Cottonwood, Arizona. He's one of the masters on inclusive education in the country, and we're delighted to have him. Please tune in to our the second segment. This is Hashtag Everyone talking about Hashtag Everything. We'll be right back. Happy Sunday.
Branching Out LLC, a premier lawn and landscaping service that can meet all your residential and commercial needs. Regardless of the season, Branching Out offers a service for maintenance-free outside living. Branching Out takes the time to listen to your needs and ensure it's done correctly the first time. If you're not satisfied, Branching Out is not satisfied. To contact Branching Out, call 573-501-0760 or visit them at www.branchingoutllc.com.
I learn, I speak, I care. Hashtag every child. Down country, because every child is a gift. Every child can learn, and every child learns differently. Up at downcountry.com. up@downcountry.com or call 217-617-3568, 217-617-3568, or visit Downcountry on Facebook or Twitter. Hashtag every child.
Calling all self-advocates, family members, and professionals who are interested in applying for Downcountry scholarships. Applications open on September 14th. Go to upatdowncountry.com for more information and to obtain a scholarship application. Still have questions? Call 217-617-3568, and Kate Doherty will guide you through the process. Don't delay. This is an amazing opportunity to gain access to national and international conferences to further your knowledge and receive CEUs. Visit upatdowncountry.com today.
Good Sunday morning. It's Hashtag Everyone talking about Hashtag Everything. It's Kate Doherty and my co-host Keely Reger, and we are so thrilled. We've got Michael Remus with us from Cottonwood, Arizona, and we have been talking about his career and his family life and how he goes about working with different school districts and talking about inclusive best practice and what that can look like. And before we went on break, we were talking about co-teaching, and I warned him while we were on break, I really wanted to talk about that concept of co-teaching a little bit, and Keely wants to talk about how you go about adopting these philosophies of change. But when we talk about co-teaching, I think sometimes co-teaching can get a bad name, Michael, because if you take every child with an IEP out of a certain grade and you put them in one classroom with a special ed teacher and a gen ed teacher, that isn't what co-teaching is supposed to be, is it?
No, and I, you know, we'll talk about the latter in a second, about changing the mindset and the philosophy, because going into co-teaching, everybody has ownership. So you can't just place students in one general ed teacher's classroom and saying we're doing co-teaching. What we found through the years, again, looking at data, looking at numbers, is what we've always done. When you look at the demographics of the school, mm-hmm. For example, like depending on what part of the country, because I work with some districts, their special ed population may be at 16%. I go to another at 8%, 12%. I always look at when you have students go into a general classroom for co-teaching or even assigned, because we assign every student to a gen ed teacher because they're a gen ed student first. Mm-hmm. Then they happen to have a condition or a disability. But when we look at co-teaching, we look at the demographics of the school and say it's 10% population in your district that has students with disabilities. That's the percentage that we have go into each general classroom. So mm-hmm. we divide them out. Mm-hmm. Now, sometimes if it's a small district, the numbers may be a bit larger, you know, because there could only be one teacher. But the goal is to spread, because everybody has ownership of these students. One, it's not fair to the general ed teacher to have half the class or more than the half, you know, just have disabilities, mm-hmm. you know, in doing that and struggling, because then it's truly not co-teaching. It almost becomes a special education classroom.
Yeah, it's just another segregated classroom, mm-hmm. yes.
Correct. So, you know, we really need to have those conversations going into co-teaching, making sure that everybody has the ownership, that we rotate kids between teachers and not just have one general ed teacher work with the special ed teacher to do all the co-teaching.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that leads right into the philosophy piece, Michael, and maybe let's touch on that. So you go into a school and you're going to talk to them about inclusion and how they need to set that up. So
correct.
Stage right. Go
stage
for
one.
It. Yes. What
okay.
do you do?
Well, phase one going in, you know, we bring all the, I usually bring all the administrative team together to make sure, are we all headed in the same direction? Do we all have the same definition? Do we have the same vocabulary?
Right.
You know, because the leadership, that building principal is going to be that instructional leader.
Absolutely.
So usually one, when I go in and work with the district, we break it down into what I call different segments of the population. In other words, we do certain activities with the school board. In other words, we'll have specific activities to talk about inclusive practices with them.
So you bring in the school board.
Pardon?
You bring in the school board. I apologize for interrupting, but I just wasn't expecting that.
She hasn't heard you speak before.
Yeah. Well, you bring in the school board because they set policy. And
absolutely.
So the first thing we need to do is talk about policies for the school district, because usually when I go in, the board will decide on policies. For
yes.
example, three or four districts that I've been, the board will make a policy about students will be at their neighborhood school. How soon that can happen, because we don't want to do what we call the dump and hope,
mm-hmm.
dumping kids in and hope it works. It's got to be very planned and very thoughtful.
Yes.
So the board, I want their buy-in from the beginning. And so they'll pass policies. For example, any new kid moving into the district would go to their neighborhood school.
Mm-hmm.
For example, another policy that the board passed, say that you were bused to, quote, a program, you know, or a segregated classroom. You know, they've been at that elementary school. Maybe they're in fifth grade and it's a K-6 building. You know, rather than pulling them out, we're going to wait for 1 year, and then they're going to go back. They all go back to a middle school,
mm-hmm.
or all the students go to a new high school or preschool coming into elementary. Then you go back to your neighborhood school.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's by attrition, so you have time to get staff in place, professional development. You know, it's very methodical, mm-hmm. you know, but the board sets the tone, and then the administration, you know, and again with them, we have language that we literally, I mean, I know you've had a couple sessions on people first language,
mm-hmm.
identify language. I mean, we truly come up with language of how the school district's going to function.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, when you talk language, it sets your mindset.
Love it. Yes.
You know, for mm-hmm. example, we don't say the word regular ed. We say general education.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have case managers. We have service coordinators.
Yes.
Because the kid doesn't need to be a case and they don't want to be managed.
Mm-hmm.
So we literally, in all the orientation packets for new principals, for new teachers, I mean, they're indoctrinated in language. And then we define everything. What's the definition for neighborhood school? What's the definition for a learning center? What's the definition for inclusive practices? Because, again, we don't use the word inclusion because people get stuck on a place. We talk about inclusive practices and what that means. So it's truly changing the culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the whole district up front, and we identify audiences, and then we do specifically planned audiences for board, administrators, teachers, parents, students, community. I mean, we literally plan for every segment of the community in a school system. And then really change that culture.
Well, and when you talk about the community, Michael, I want to make sure everybody also, it's like gifted education is part of that community. This isn't just quote unquote special education. This is gifted education.
Mm-hmm.
This is your diverse learners, your at-risk kids. This is everyone within the culture of that school system. I mean, you even include the bus drivers and, I mean, you include the lunch. I mean, every part of a system that he goes in has to buy into this philosophy and the mindset that all of these children, all of the children, hashtag every child, is part of this community, and what they're doing is to support it.
Well,
absolutely.
And this is something that Kate and I have been talking about, that there needs to be this culture shift. And when you started talking about that, my ears perked up, because what Kate is saying, what you are saying, what I'm sitting here literally like, yes, in my seat, jumping up and down, listening to you, is because this is a culture shift, and you do have to change those mindsets. And I love that you're including everyone, because that's the only way it's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, because all kids are unique.
Mm-hmm.
Every kid is different, whether you be talented, gifted, all the way down to a student and they have significant needs. We need to meet those needs, and we need to have the mindset that every kid will learn and achieve.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Because, well, and again, because it's all about life after school. Because there, believe it or not, there is life after elementary and secondary education. And that's what we have to...
These 12 years will fly by. They mm-hmm. will. And there is a big old world out there, as Kate calls it, the big bad world, or whatever
mm-hmm.
your catchphrase is, Kate. And, they need to be ready for it. They, you know, this is going to go really quickly.
Absolutely. And that's why when I work with staff and all the different groups, my first question is, I don't see special ed churches or special ed malls. I mean, why, when they come to the school, do we have to be so segregated and different?
Right.
That's not life.
Exactly.
No, it's not.
What, didn't you say that yesterday? Was it yesterday, Kate? No special ed world?
There is no special ed world.
Correct.
That our kids are going to live in. And we are going to be right back, because this is coming to the close of the second segment. We are with Michael Remus. And I don't know about y'all out there listening, but Keely and I haven't. We're already in church. So this is hashtag everyone listening. You're listening to hashtag every, talking about hashtag everything. I can't even get our hashtags right this morning. We're hoping you're having a blessed Sunday, and we'll be back in just a few. God bless.
Branching Out LLC, a premier lawn and landscaping service that can meet all your residential and commercial needs. Regardless of the season, Branching Out offers a service for maintenance-free outside living. Branching Out takes the time to listen to your needs and ensure it's done correctly the first time. If you're not satisfied, Branching Out is not satisfied. To contact Branching Out, call 573-501-0760 or visit them at www.branchingoutllc.com.
I learn, I speak, I care. Hashtag every child. Down country, because every child is a gift. Every child can learn, and every child learns differently. Up at downcountry.com. Up at downcountry.com or call 217-617-3568, 217-617-3568, or visit Downcountry on Facebook or Twitter. Hashtag every child.
Calling all self-advocates, family members, and professionals who are interested in applying for Downcountry scholarships. Applications open on September 14th. Go to upatdowncountry.com for more information and to obtain a scholarship application. Still have questions? Call 217-617-3568, and Kate Doherty will guide you through the process. Don't delay. This is an amazing opportunity to gain access to national and international conferences to further your knowledge and receive CEUs. Visit upatdowncountry.com today.
Welcome back. It's hashtag everyone talking about hashtag everything, and we're going to jump right in. We're with Michael Remus this morning, and we're talking about inclusive education, inclusive best practice, and what that means. And while we were on break, we were talking about, you know, the pushback. There's a lot of misnomers out there. Sometimes when we talk about inclusion, we hear things like, well, it won't be fair to the other kids, or somehow one child isn't going to be getting the attention that they need because we're going to have all these kids who have needs in the classroom. And how about you address a little bit of that pushback, Michael?
Okay, well, usually I get pushback in three areas going into the different districts. One, it's going to be costly, like it costs a fortune. I will tell you that in most districts, it saved dollars, or it was even. It didn't take more dollars. Mm-hmm. And the reason I say that is because, again, going back to our earlier conversation, when we're doing like a lot of inclusive practices, many more students are benefiting. Mm-hmm. Rather than just those students who are identified, of looking at that. The other thing of it is, if you've got a district that's got segregated programs that you're busing all these kids to, mm-hmm. when they go to their neighborhood schools, you get rid of a lot of that busing. It's how you direct your dollars. For example, in one district I worked in, we saved $4.3 million in transportation alone, just busing. That could go to extra supports as paraprofessionals, equipment, professional development. So you got to almost look at your budget and how do you want to spend your dollars. Mm-hmm. The other big area is, it's going to take away from other students. And again, in one district I worked in, we brought in, you know, kind of going back to your conversation earlier, Kate, of data, mm-hmm. I brought in from Minnesota Beacons of Excellence, that came in and did a study both in the general ed classroom and the special ed classroom about kids being on task, and particularly where kids were included. What they found is students with disabilities were more time on task than typical peers, you know, in looking at that. And I will tell you, they got much more instruction in a general ed class than a special ed class, because if you look at data, if kids are grouped in a segregated classroom and a student goes off behavior-wise, tube feeding or whatever, the other kids are waiting.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So when I hear the special ed teachers, but they get more one-on-one in a special ed classroom, my first question is, let me see the data. because I'm finding that when they're included and the supports are going in the general classroom, all students are much more supported. They're on task. And so we need to tear down those barriers and then show the people how this can work.
Amen.
Absolutely. And, you know, Michael, one of the things that I really would love to see happen when I think about this, because you do have such a unique lens. You have parent, educator, administrator, because very often teachers look at it from, you know, just their teacher perspective, either from their content area or from, you know, teachers have a tendency to teach how we're taught. Or parents look at things simply from the parent perspective, and administrators look at it very often from administrator. One of the unique things about you is that a lens that you have where you're able to look at it through all those different focal points. But from my perspective as a teacher and an educator, I believe that can be taught. We can teach administrators to use their lenses to look from a parent and from an educator perspective. We can teach educators to better understand. And I guess one of the things that I'd really love to see is a way that we could help people see the world through those different lenses. From the different perspectives. Yes.
Well, and again, we do a lot of activities, just what you're talking about. We developed a disability awareness packet for students, and we also do it with adults, like I've done it with school board members. Mm-hmm. You know, at a meeting where we'll pull them out and play like they have a certain disability and say, well, mm-hmm. I don't have time for you. Get down the hall. I mean, it's really developing that mindset. And again, going back to that culture that we need to value everybody in our community and how do we support each one? Because even when I deal with parents, when they come to me like oh, that kids in the classroom has a nature behavior, my question is then, what if your child was in an accident next week and got traumatic brain injury or whatever, and mm-hmm. they started having behaviors? Mm-hmm. What kind of school system or community do you want your child to be in? Mm-hmm. Because when they get out of school, going back to some of your comments, when they get out of school and it's short term, you know, what's community going to be like when we're an adult? We need to prepare everyone,
absolutely,
you know, to be in community.
Well, and that behavior piece, we'll have you come back for a whole nother show on behavior if you're willing, because I think that piece gets really interesting, because very often sometimes what I'll see, and I've spoken to you enough to know, like, it'll be something we're calling a behavior from a student, but it's tapping a pencil on a desk, which is annoying, but the kids aren't paying any attention to it. But yeah, it drives a teacher crazy. But is that a behavior or is that not a behavior? So if you're willing, we're going to have you come back on that one, because I already know the answer.
I'd be glad to.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a whole nother conversation. But, you know, Michael, I want you to know how blessed I feel that you agreed to be on the show today mm-hmm. and taking the time out of your very busy schedule. And I can't wait. Where are you presenting at next?
You know, I don't have anything planned at this time.
Oh, my goodness. You really shouldn't have said that. You know, when I get off the phone.
I think I can schedule you in somewhere.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you're interested in having Mr. Remus to the Tri-States, you can email us at info@downcountry.com. Love to bring him back in.
And Kate, if anybody wants any tools or any of the materials that we've designed, we would be glad to send them anything.
Oh, fantastic.
Oh, that is amazing.
All right, so if you're listening today and you'd like to have some of Mr. Remus's information, we will happily get that to you. So this is #everyone talking about #everything. And we would, with Michael Remus, who's been an absolute delight. And if you would like more information, please visit us on Facebook at Down Country, or you can always email us at info@upatdowncountry.com. Have a blessed Sunday. God bless everyone.